Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today, our guest is Derek Volk, president of Volk Packaging, author of Chasing the Rabbit, and host of the Derek Volk Show, actually heard here on WLOB. Derek, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dave. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, hey, you have a great book. Huge success. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
It really is talking about a dad's life raising a son on the autism spectrum. Talk to me a little about how this book came about in your mind and what brought you to actually write it.
Well, actually, it's kind of a funny story. I actually sat down to write a business book because a friend of mine said, you know, if you write a business book and go into a potential client, present the book, your credibility goes way up. He said, it doesn't even have to be good. Like, the book can suck. It really doesn't even matter because they're not going to read it anyway. They're just going to flip through it while you're there, but you'll have a lot of credibility. And I thought, you know what, that actually kind of makes sense. So I sat down to write a business book. I had absolutely no idea what I was going to write about. But I sat down to write a business book. And as I was sitting there, I heard a voice in my head, which was so clear it was almost audible, that said, that's not the book you're supposed to be writing. You're supposed to write a book about Dylan. And so my son, who's now 26. He was 22 at the time. So I started typing, and I typed about three pages, took me about an hour, and said to myself, this is ridiculous. I'm never going to write a book. It just took me an hour to write three pages. But then later, that voice just kind of kept coming up in my head, and I took the mic, actually, that I used to record the Derek Volk Show, and because I do all my shows pre-recorded, and I send them by email to my fabulous and your fabulous producer, Debbie Davis.
Yes.
Sitting across the table from us. And I looked at the mic and I thought, what if I recorded the book? So that's what I did. I just recorded the whole book. And my daughter, who's now a law school student, typed it out for me. I would send her the chapters and she would type them all out for me. And all of a sudden, I ended up with a book. I didn't think anybody was ever going to read it. So I just let rip and said whatever I was thinking.
Yeah, and that's probably the key, right, is the fact that it is what more than just you are thinking. And that's what has made the book such a success, I think, not only from a personal perspective, but also a business perspective. So in some way, you have made a business book, haven't you?
In some ways, I have. I never thought it would turn into that, but it certainly has because of Dylan's experiences in the workplace. There's only a small part of the book that's actually about his jobs experience. We could probably write a whole nother book because he's 26 and he just got fired a couple weeks ago from, I think, his 38th job. So that's a lot of jobs.
That's for a 26-year-old.
He's very good at getting jobs, not so good at keeping them. Very good at getting them. And so from all these jobs experience and from doing part of our presentation about the book is Dylan talking about his experience in the workplace, it kind of morphed into a whole nother presentation, which is just about Dylan's experiences in the workplace. And it's a fantastic presentation. It's basically all Dylan. I get up, I talk a little bit about being a dad and the owner of a company, and then Dylan pretty much rolls from there.
So let's set the stage for the audience, for those who don't know you,
sure,
right, and don't know Dylan. Talk to us a little bit about Dylan. Talk to us a little about his condition. Talk to us a little bit about all that so we can set the stage, and then we'll get into the show about it.
Sure. So Dylan is my oldest of four. He's 26 years old, and he was diagnosed at 8 with, at the time, what they called Asperger's syndrome. Technically, it's not a diagnosis anymore, but everybody still calls it that. But it's high functioning. It's now considered called high functioning autism. We had no idea what to do with it at the time, nor did most of his teachers, nor did most counselors. It was a relatively new diagnosis because Dylan is, from what you look on the outside, looks perfectly normal. And for those listening, I then get insulted when I say that he's not normal. He's not normal. And he knows that. He doesn't have a problem with it. And he talks about that during our presentation. And it's in the book as well. And so from there, we went through a whole pile of experiences throughout his life, which I put together and created this book called Chasing the Rabbit. And Dylan has probably given me enough content since the book ended to now to write another book.
Right.
But I'm not doing that. He's actually working on a sequel. And I also am the owner, for those of you who don't know, I own a corrugated box company in Biddeford. We've been in business for 50 years this year.
Congratulations. And it's awesome,
thank you,
by the way.
Thank you. And so I also employ some people with autism. And so between that experience and my experiences with Dylan and all the jobs that he's had and lost and all the reasons why he's had and lost jobs, which are often varied but also often very similar, it's just given us an interesting platform to speak about autism in the workplace. And we've had some great presentations. We're here in Maine in May in front of the Maine Human Resources Conference, and you know, we spoke last year in Houston and in front of, at the Texas Workforce Development Conference. There were like 1,400 people in the room. And, you know, once Dylan gets going, he grabs them. And, well, you know, you saw his presentation.
I know. It's great. Yeah. So we're talking with Derek Volk, president of Volk Packaging and author of Chasing the Rabbit. I'm your host, David Chulo. You're listening to the HR Power Hour. Derek, talk to us a little bit about, you said that Dylan has a great ability to get a job, right? But not a great ability to keep one. What are some of the core issues that you are that are experienced at the workplace that create this problem?
Well, the biggest issue, I would say, is a lack of understanding. A lack of understanding of how Dylan's brain works, and also a lack of understanding of the patience level that can be needed when hiring somebody with a disability. And it takes a manager to kind of step out of what their normal role is as a manager and just tweak it a little. And it's not a lot. I mean, I'm not talking about gigantic changes to how we treat somebody, but you do have to look at them differently. I talk about sometimes this whole notion that came out, I don't know, maybe 15 years ago, that people with disabilities are, quote, differently abled. And I think that set a very bad tone, because it created this narrative that they're differently abled, not disabled. And so we say that they're differently abled, implying that they're just as able as somebody else, just in different ways. And then we later go to those same employers that we were calling these people differently abled, and we say, oh, and we'd like you to make some accommodations. And they say, well, wait a second. You know, they've been taught that, you know, they've been kind of almost brainwashed into this idea that they're just differently abled. So why would I have to make accommodations?
Right.
And so we've made it more difficult. I think that the term differently abled actually made it more difficult to help employers understand that accommodations need to be made. I don't think disabled is an insult. I don't think people say it's not politically correct, right? I don't think so, because Dylan is disabled. He is less able to do the same basic functions that other people are. Doesn't mean he's a terrible person. Doesn't mean he can't get the job done. He's just has a little more challenges than the average person. So I think employers need to realize that the people with disabilities of all levels, of all degrees, have great ability to do certain things in the workplace that can be very beneficial to their companies. But they have to be open to the idea that some people just maybe need a little more help than others.
You know, managers typically, when they're hiring somebody, or leaders, when they hire somebody, think of, hey, I have to get a task done, a job done, a function done, because this function is a cog in the wheel of the whole organization, right? So it's
yep.
It's a piece of getting it done. And so you say, okay, this takes X amount of time to get done. And then you have to interject that this may take longer to get done because you're dealing with a disabled individual. And so it creates a conflict immediately right up front between the employer and this potential employee, right, that this is going to slow things down. And then you talk about it. We're going to get into some examples of employers having to listen differently, act differently, create accommodations differently.
Speak differently,
act differently, right? All these pieces. And look, I'm a huge supporter of it, but I certainly understand from a company perspective the challenge, right? That challenge that people are going through. What do you say about that?
Well, it is a challenge. And I think that employers, managers need to understand that especially right now, we have an extremely low unemployment rate. Maine has one of the highest gaps between people without disabilities and people with disabilities in the workplace. We have, I think there's like, from what I last I heard, there's like 4,000 open jobs on the Maine Jobs Bank. There are people out there that, yeah, they may take a little longer. You may have to think and act and speak a little differently, but you can utilize these people that will be probably the most loyal employees that you're going to have.
When Dylan
has a job, he will do anything to keep that job. He works so hard to keep the job because he knows what it means to him. And he knows that, especially now that he's 26, that getting paid for your work gives you a reason to get up in the morning, if nothing else. Mm-hmm. And that's really important. So there's an autism tsunami coming. Because all these millennials that have been diagnosed with some degree, somewhere on the spectrum of autism, are entering the workforce. And if we don't, as a business community, figure out how to embrace that and make the most of their talents, then we're all going to be paying for them. Because they're all going to end up on some kind of social services, and they're going to end up living at their parents' house, and they're not going to feel good about themselves, and it goes on and on and on. And
right.
It's an entire cultural idea that we all need to figure out how to better understand, in this case, we're just talking about autism, so that we can help this next generation, which has a much higher rate of autism for whatever reason, enter the workforce and be successful.
When you talk to employers, what are some of the questions they ask you specifically when it comes to this?
The most common thing they ask is, and they usually ask Dylan most of the questions.
Of course.
So when we get to the Q&A, I could usually just pretty much leave because they just want to pick his brain. And what they want to know is how they can better communicate with him, because that's the key to most of the issues comes down to communication.
Right.
He loses a lot of his jobs because of communication, misunderstandings. He takes everything very literally, as do a lot of people on the autism spectrum. They take the words very literally. And as anyone who's studied communication knows, only approximately 7% of the words that we use are actually part of the communication that we're creating. The eye contact, the tone, the pitch, the body language, all the other things are all part of communication. But if you're only hearing the words, you miss out on an awful lot.
Right, right. Give an example, if you would. I know you. I've heard you get an example before. Give an example of so that people clearly understand what you're referring to.
Well, the most used example that we use, because we use it in both presentations, is when Dylan was living in Utah and he got a job working delivering pizzas. And at the end of the day, he had to go back to the pizza place and he had to mop the floor and clean up and do some end of day stuff, which was like midnight. And so one day Dylan was there and he spilled the mop water all over the floor. And as he says, it was a little room, a lot of water. And so he's like stepping through all this water and he's trying to mop it up. And he says, you know, I don't know what this thing is going to look like in the morning. I'm not an expert on evaporation. And so I went over to my boss and I'm like, hey, you know, is this good enough? And he said, well, if you think that's good enough, I guess we can go. Well, Dylan was like, I don't really know what that means. So he went back and mopped some more and spent another 15 minutes mopping. And wasn't really doing much more than splashing the water all around. So he went back to the boss and he said, you know, what do you think? And the boss said, dude, if you think that looks good, I guess we can go. Well, if you listen to, if you think that looks good, we can go. So Dylan was like, all right, I think it looks fine. And so they left. And he got fired the next morning because, of course, he came in and it looked horrible.
Right.
And so all he wanted was a yes or no. If the guy just said, no, Dylan, you need to, it's not good enough, keep going, he would have kept going. He would have stayed there till 2 o'clock in the morning. But the guy said, if you think that's good enough, I guess we can
go. Right, because Dylan didn't understand sarcasm, right? He didn't understand the nuance of the language,
exactly.
Right, in that case.
Yeah. So, you know, he said, Dylan will tell people, as direct as you think you need to be, as literal as you need to, as clear in his instructions that you think you need to give, ratchet it up for me. So whatever you think is like super, super clear, make it a little clearer, because that's how clear I need instructions. And if you give me clear instructions, I will follow them. But I need to know what I'm supposed to do and what I'm not supposed to do.
And do you find that that's where the trouble really comes into? And you know, you said 36 jobs or something. Has it almost always been a clarification issue?
Not almost. No, I wouldn't say that. There are three big issues that Dylan runs into. One is the communication issue where people don't give him clear instructions. Two is his inability to multitask, which is very common for people on the autism spectrum, organizational skills and ability to handle multiple things at a time. That's a big issue. And the last issue is the idea that, like you said earlier, it might take a little longer to either get things done or learn things. And so what Dylan often says is, I've lost a lot of jobs in the fourth week, because the first week is training. So they're kind of putting up with, you know, they're fine, you know, they're teaching you stuff and you're just pretty much listening most of the time.
Yep.
The second week, you're starting to do things on your own. The third week, they're saying, why is it taking him so long to figure this out? Why is he asking questions that he shouldn't be asking at this point? Because he asks a lot of questions so he can get clarification.
Yeah.
So he knows exactly what he's supposed to do. A lot of times in that training, they go through so many different things. He also has a very difficult time figuring out what's important. So if you throw 100 things at him, they all seem of equal importance to him,
mm-hmm.
which is why when he was in school, taking notes was so difficult, because the teacher would talk about, you know, whatever they're talking about in that class, and everything seemed of equal importance to him. When he read the chapter in a history book, everything seemed of equal importance. He couldn't figure out, he couldn't pull out what the important details were versus what the random just fill in pages details were.
Yeah.
So, you know, those three things tend to be the biggest issues. And then in the fourth week, they fire him because they've had enough.
Well, we're going to get into detail on those three issues when
sure.
we come back. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we'll be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
Hi, I'm Kelly Flagg, General Manager of the Body Architect Fitness Center in Portland, Maine. I want to personally invite you to come meet us. If you've been considering joining a gym but haven't yet because you're a little nervous or just plain old don't like the gym, come see us. We have created a 30-day personal training experience just for you. meet our trainers, try a few workouts, and use our facility for 30 days for just $79. Call 774-2196 or visit thebodyarchitect.com today.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAKorea.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today we're talking with Derek Volk, president of Volk Packaging, author of Chasing the Rabbit, and host of The Derek Volk Show. Heard right here.
Right here.
Before this show.
Before this show.
Before this show.
You already missed it. Go to my website, DerekVolkShow.com.
You can do it next week.
You can do it next week. You can catch it next week, 9 a.m.
That's all right.
Or go to my podcast.
We're talking about autism in the workplace, a very serious but important topic.
Yes.
So we talked about the three different areas that Dylan has experienced in the workplace that typically causes him to lose a job. Let's go through them a little bit. And what I'd like to do in this segment is kind of talk about how employers can avoid having to fire people because of these issues, because they'll be educated about it. Make sense?
Yep.
So that's what I'm looking for. So let's start with the first one, the communication. You gave a little bit about it. Can you talk a little bit more about the communication part?
Yeah. So like I said before the break, people on the autism spectrum, and for those listening who may know someone on autism, my kid's not like that or whatever, it's a spectrum. So everybody's very different. There's a huge range, you know, there's a range from the nonverbal 23-year-old who would honestly be very difficult to employ. And, I think most of their parents know that. And then the other end of the spectrum, which include, you know, possibly Bill Gates and Mark Zuckerberg. If you've seen the movie, The Social Network, we're pretty confident that Mark Zuckerberg from Facebook has autism. I mean, it's almost obvious, at least in the movie.
Yeah.
I've never met the guy. We don't hang out. But although I guess he was in Maine this summer, I heard.
Well,
yeah.
He doesn't buy boxes?
He didn't call me, no.
He doesn't ship Facebook everywhere?
No, you don't. That's too bad, though. So there is a huge range. The communication issue from a lot of them comes down to, like I said, very clear instructions. Dylan needs super clear instructions.
So give an example of how an employer would ratchet that instruction up so clear.
Okay. Basically, you just need to tell them what they need to do, maybe even write it down, if possible. And it doesn't have to be a fancy written out 1, 2, 3 on a Word document. It can be a hand scratch saying, you know, these are the three things I need you to do. This is the order I need you to do them in. And they'll do it. You know, most of the time they will do it. They'll get the job done. And from my experience, they'll do a nice job with it. But they need to know this is what I need to do. So you can't give them three things simultaneously and say, here are three things I need you to do. I need them done by the end of the day. That can be overwhelming. And I know it sounds like, well, just do one, then do the other, and then do the other. That may sound simple to you and me, but it's not simple to somebody with autism. Going all the way back to when Dylan was four or five years old, and we would say to him after dinner, we'd say, Dylan, go upstairs, get your jammies on, brush your teeth, and pick out a story. And we'd go up in Dylan's room, and he's literally just standing there doing nothing. Or he's doing something completely different. And we'd say, Dylan, what are you doing? We told you, pick out a story, brush your teeth, and get your jammies on. Now we just set them in a different order. But there were three things all at once, and it's just, boom, brain explosion. And so he ends up either freezing and doing nothing or just doing something completely different because that multitasks was too difficult. So how do we relate that to the workplace? When, for example, the young woman that works for us will say, you know, here's the task, and, you know, after you do this, then start working on this. Or here's the task, here's when I need it done. And so that gives her some structure.
Yeah, structure and guidelines.
Instead of saying, here, can you do this for me ASAP? ASAP. What does that mean? As soon as possible, which could mean right away, as soon as humanly possible, or as soon as possible, meaning as soon as you get around to it. It's a very vague term.
Right. Right.
You know, now you and I may get something where the boss says, here, do this ASAP. And from the tone and the pitch and the eye contact and the whatever, you're going to say, oh,
I got to do it right now.
I better drop what I'm doing
right,
and do
exactly
this.
Right, right.
But they don't get that.
Right.
So they don't know that kind of ambiguity.
Does it also translate in the reverse? So the question being, when he communicates back to supervisors or managers, is his communication not as clear by them?
That's a good question. I'm not sure. I don't think so, because Dylan tends to be very blunt, very direct, sometimes to a fault, as do a lot of people on the autism spectrum, because the frontal lobe, which is what kind of controls your filter, so to speak, is not developed correctly, for lack of a better term. And so
there's often the filter isn't there.
The filter often isn't there to say things just the way people want to hear them, or to, for example, and I'll give you a quick example. Dylan and I were in Cleveland, Ohio, speaking. And after we're done, a woman asked, does it get any, I have a 10-year-old and he's having a real hard time socially. Does it get any easier? And I thought, oh my goodness, what is he going to say? Because he's not going to tell her what she wants to hear just to make her feel better. It's just not something he'll do. Now, he can pull that off once in a while on a job interview. He'll tell people what they want to hear because he, you know, like he'll go.
He's figured it out.
He's figured out that if you're going to Wendy's, you want to tell them that your goal in life is to work at Wendy's and not that I just want to work at a burger place and get a job and get paid.
Right.
So he has figured that out. But, you know, I kind of was frozen for a minute going, oh, my goodness, what's he going to say to this woman? Because if he tells her that, no, it doesn't get any easier, she's going to leave here with no hope. And
right.
It's going to be very discouraging.
Right.
He did a great job. He said, look, I'll tell you right now, when you're 10, there's nothing good about being different. It's all about being like everybody else. And we can water it down any way you want, but really that's the way it is. It doesn't get much better through high school. But when you get into your 20s, it gets a little better because people are kind of tired of the same old, so they're happy to kind of, somebody that's kind of unique and different is actually more interesting. So tell him to hang in there because it will get better. And I was like, wow.
That's a great answer.
What a great answer.
Yeah.
He didn't give her a bunch of BS saying, don't worry, everything's going to be fine, which
it isn't.
And at the same time, he gave her some hope that, you know, if you hang in there, which I thought was a great term, hang in there. I've kind of plagiarized it from him. And I say it to parents all the time, hang in there. You know, you can do this. It will get better. So anyway, I don't know if his communication is challenging to people in the work, employers or not. That's a really interesting question. I guess I'd have to ask them.
Yeah, well, it's
employers.
Just a question, right?
Yeah, no,
because
it's really
communication is two-way street,
yeah.
Right? And so I certainly understand that the employer has to learn how to talk back, all that. I get that. But in reverse, if there is a challenge back, it doesn't help the case, right? It doesn't
right.
help the relationship building, which is work.
Yeah. Well, one of the issues that Dylan had for a long time, and a lot of people on the spectrum have, is they argue a lot. And
okay. He's
not arguing necessarily just to prove he's right, although sometimes he is. But we bought him a T-shirt once.
Not as a son.
No.
He would never do that with a parent, ever.
We bought him a T-shirt once that said, everything I say is substantiated by my own opinion. The perfect T-shirt.
Yeah, perfect, yeah.
But a lot of times they're arguing because they need more clarification. They're confused. They're not following what you think is simple instructions, and they need more clarification. So they'll instead of just come right when they're younger, especially, and they haven't learned how to do this, they'll argue because they don't know how to say, this is overwhelming for me, or I'm confused. And so the world is a very confusing place sometimes. It's very fast-paced. People talk very fast, and they switch from topic to topic, which can be very confusing. Dylan sent us a picture one time of a mouse hitting into a maze, and under it he texted us, "This is my brain every morning when I wake up." And that's a pretty tough way to wake up in the morning, thinking that that's... You could have three tasks that day, and that's what it feels like.
Yeah, that's what you feel. We're talking with Derek Volk. We're talking about his book, Chasing the Rabbit. You know, one of the other questions you talked about from a multitasking standpoint is that they struggle with it, right? And that they're not able to do multiple tasks at the same time. When an employer thinks about that, is it better to look at simple jobs, or can they move into multiple areas over time? From a career pathing standpoint.
Yeah, I think they can. But it's, you know, I keep saying this, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but there's a huge range when we talk about autism. There's just a really big range. And we can talk briefly, if you want, a little bit, that doesn't really have to do with Dylan, but it's really important, which is getting a job. And the challenges that a lot of people with autism have getting a job. We can talk about that a little later. But as far as the question about whether they can develop into learning how to do that, I think that they can to some degree, but they're always going to need some kind of structure. They really thrive on that structure. And I think what's really important to keep in mind is that most people cannot multitask. They think they can, but they actually can't. If they're doing multitasking, most people, me included, and I like to think I'm a multitasker, but the fact is I'm doing some things better than others. Other things I'm not doing as well.
Of course.
And I read a book about Bill Clinton one time, and it said that he was one of the few people that can actually multitask. He can read the newspaper, have the TV on, and have somebody talking to him, and he can actually retain all three pieces of information, which is pretty amazing. Most people cannot do that.
Right.
So even though that neurotypical person, which is the autism world's term for normal people, neurotypical, even though the neurotypical person may look like they're multitasking, they're probably not. But with a person with autism, they're definitely not. They need to have one task, finish it, and move on to the next one. And if they get good at those tasks, they don't necessarily, like you said earlier, always have to be slower. Like the woman that works for me, the young woman that works in my office, when we started giving her certain tasks, she took a little longer to get them. Now that she's done them month after month, she gets some
rote memory, right?
Exactly.
It just does over and over the same thing and making that happen. No, and that makes sense. And that's the last part we talked about, is it takes time.
Yeah.
And I know that's individual for every person and every level and all that sort of thing. Is this something we know that an employer can't ask these questions, right? So, and Dylan's figured out, I know, that you can't ask the questions on hiring. We're going to talk about that in the next segment in a minute. But, you know, once the employer knows, the first question they're going to say is, how much time? How much patience do I really have to have? And do I have the time for this?
Right, exactly. And that's going to vary from person to person. Dylan, his position on people asking is, they're not going to ask, but they're not going to tend to ask him anyway. Because in a job interview, he can fake normal pretty well for 15 to 20 minutes. So he can pull that off without them having any idea. And if you met Dylan on the street and had a conversation with him briefly, you probably would not know that he had autism unless he says something kind of outrageous, which he tends to do. But the challenge is, when do you tell them?
Right.
You know, and so Dylan has figured out that his position is, I tell them after they offered me the job, but before I do the paperwork. That way, I'm not telling them after they've already got me all on board and hired, because that seems unethical. But I'm not telling them before they offer me the job, because then they may not offer me the job. So I wait until they offer me the job, but I haven't filled out the paperwork. I don't know what HR people would feel about that theory or position, but that's what he does. And, you know, people, for the most part, they say that they're understanding. They'll say that they'll give him direct instructions, and they think they are. But...
Well, that's the key. They really think they are.
A lot of times they think they are.
Right.
The other problem that Dylan runs into is that, as he puts it, people go by what they feel, not by what they know.
Yeah.
So even though you tell them, you disclose that you have this disability, If 3 weeks later, it doesn't feel like you have a disability, they forget.
Right.
And then they fire you.
Of course. That's true. And it is a fit. And yeah. People get into a routine. That's actually true. We're talking with Derek Volk, president of Volk Packaging, author of Chasing the Rabbit, and host of the Derek Volk Show, which is before my show, right, Derek?
It is.
It's before. It's a great show. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back.
Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
Hi, I'm Kelly Flagg, General Manager of the Body Architect Fitness Center in Portland, Maine. I want to personally invite you to come meet us. If you've been considering joining a gym but haven't yet because you're a little nervous or just plain old don't like the gym, come see us. We have created a 30-day personal training experience just for you. Meet our trainers, try a few workouts, and use our facility for 30 days for just $79. Call 774-2196 or visit thebodyarchitect.com today.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAKorea.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Our guest today is Derek Volk. We're talking about autism in the workplace. We're also talking about his book, Chasing the Rabbit. Derek, we have talked most of the show about the challenges that employers could deal with in terms of whoever to keep and how to communicate and how to multitask with them, how to be clear in communication. But let's talk about the hiring end of it now, okay? As you have said, and I'm sure we'll reiterate, somebody could come in this case, Dylan can come in, and act what we would call, quote-unquote, normal for that 15-minute, half-hour interview. And pretty much will get a job. It's after that that causes the problem. But there are other people who have autism that really aren't going to be that lucky.
Right.
Talk about that.
Yeah, we have been talking a lot about Dylan's experience, and that's great for the person who can pull that off. But there are a lot of people who can't. There are a lot of people on the autism spectrum who are just socially awkward. They don't make eye contact. They sometimes don't speak clearly. They mumble, or they don't know how to keep a conversation going. They don't know how to have a dialogue. They only want to talk about what they want to talk about, things like that. That's much more challenging as far as getting the job because, look, let people are people, right?
Yes.
Human resources managers are people.
Still people.
Employers are people. Small
yes.
business
yes.
people are people, obviously. If you have two people that come in for the same job and they have both have skills that can do the job, one of them is socially awkward and kind of makes you feel uncomfortable. The other one, you can see yourself going out with a beer on Friday night. Who are you going to hire? I mean,
right. And let's be realistic.
That's realistic.
That's
I mean,
realistic. Right.
That's
we will say you don't discriminate but you naturally select.
Right.
That's what it
exactly.
is. Exactly.
You naturally select people. People no different than yeah, I'm in sales, no different than buyers. People buy from people that they are comfortable
that's
with.
Right.
If you're a salesman and you walk in and you make that buyer feel very uncomfortable, he's not going to buy from you or she's not going to buy from you because they don't really want you coming back every week
right.
to talk about whatever it is, you know, in my case, boxes. So you have to make them feel comfortable. If you're someone with autism and you're socially awkward and you don't tend to look up much, and you don't speak terribly clearly, you're going to be less likely to get that job. So that's a real challenge. And so again, employers need to kind of stretch their minds. And one thing, and this is really hard to do, but if they could see the signs, if people understood what someone on the autism spectrum looked like, and it's not that they physically look like it, but what some of the traits are. You know, it's a lot easier to then look at them as a whole package. And I know that a lot of people with autism don't want to share their disability. I get that.
And they don't have to.
But if more employers understood when they're talking to someone who's socially awkward that, you know, this person may be on the autism spectrum, I want to give them a fair chance. So I need to look at their resume and how I think that they could perform on the job, just on how they could perform on the job, not whether I feel super comfortable with them and I want to hang out with them on the weekends. And that's challenging. That's challenging.
And that's the realistic.
And it is. It
right,
is
in terms realistic. Of what it is. So when Dylan, for example, tells them, or when an employer finds out about it, what type of reactions has he seen?
Most of the time, people say they understand. They say they're going to be give him very clear instructions. Dylan, as Dylan puts it, he says, they always throw in that they know somebody with Asperger's. He said, I don't necessarily believe that. I think it's kind of a cool thing to say. He said, not everybody could possibly know somebody with Asperger's. I think at this point, they probably do. Probably everybody knows somebody, or at least somebody that they think in their family might have some autism at some level. So they tend to be understanding. But then, like I said earlier, 3 weeks later, when they just feel like Dylan's not doing the job or not cutting it, and they forget that he has a disability, or they don't understand the disability. And that's the biggest thing, is they don't understand. It's one thing to understand that somebody has autism and wherever they are on the spectrum. But it's another thing to say, okay, you have this challenge. How does it impact
your job?
And I was just reading a report that a friend sent me of their child was just diagnosed with autism. And as I'm reading the report, there's all these tests that they gave the child. And they're just like, he scored in the 81st percentile on this, the 37th percentile on that, the 26th percentile on that, blah, 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 blah. And I was familiar with some of the terms, but I said to her, you need to go to the person that gave this test and say, okay, I get the 37%. How does that impact them in school?
Right.
How is it going
to
impact him at home? How is that 37%?
Put it in layman's terms.
Yeah, give me examples of how that's going to work. And I think at some level, the person with autism, and you know what? It could be the person with autism's family. Families need to step up. And I know you wouldn't do this for your normal kid at 23 years old, but if you have a child on the spectrum, don't be afraid to sit and ask the boss, his boss or her boss, if you can sit down for a few minutes and just explain to them, because the person with autism isn't necessarily going to be able to communicate, this is what I need and this is how I
need
it.
And that's an interesting challenge for HR, right? So, you know, HR has been trained that unless they're a minor, you don't talk to the parents, right? You talk to the employee.
Yep.
And you can't really have that dialogue with the parent. You can't really have a dialogue with anybody else, right? And that is a challenge for HR. And in these situations, I guess it's having that dialogue with the candidate, or in this case, the employee, to say, maybe it's about the employee saying it's okay to have that conversation, given permission to do so.
Call your lawyer, write up a quick form that they're waiving their permission. I mean, we have a sheet that we got from, I don't remember where we got it, from one of the doctor's office, and I just made a bunch of copies of it. And Dylan will give it to every doctor he goes to because he wants the doctor to be able to communicate with us, because he knows that he can't explain to them what's going on, or he can't understand when they give him a bunch of medical mumbo jumbo.
Right.
So he's always telling them, call my parents. You know, he was at the bank yesterday. Here, talk to the teller. And the teller wouldn't talk to me because...
Right. right? Can't.
I'm not there. I'm away. You know, I'm 3,000 miles away because Dylan lives in Los Angeles. So he's like, no, talk to my dad because I don't understand what you're telling me. And the teller wouldn't talk to me. And I said, I don't know, Dylan. I'll have to go to the bank tomorrow and try to figure this out. But there's got to be some sign off that you can say, you know, if you can talk to my mom or my dad, they can help you better understand how to make me successful.
And I think that's what we want, right? That's what we want.
We want
right?
people we want to be successful.
That's right.
And that's so, right. you know, break the rules a little. Figure out a way. There's a way around this. It's not rocket science. There's a way for HR people to talk to someone's parent and say, this is what he or she is going to need. The young woman that works for me in my office, her mom called me and she said, you know, would you be willing to have her job shadow for a couple of days because she can't get a job? She's very socially awkward and she's having a really hard time getting in somebody to hire her. And she just wants to see what it's like in an office environment. So we brought her in. I said, sure. Yeah. Have her come on in. And she was terrific. We gave her some things to do. She did a great job. And now she's been with us for like 3 years and she's our executive assistant. She does all kinds of projects that, you know, nobody else has time to do.
That's right.
And that came from a mom kind of doing something that she wouldn't do for her neurotypical kid.
No, you're absolutely right. You're listening to the HR Power Hour. We're talking with Derek Volk, author of Chasing the Rabbit. We're discussing autism in the workplace. Derek, before we go to break, as we go into the last segment of the show, what's the biggest thing you've learned from writing this book and dealing with this issue?
Oh, boy. I've learned so much. I was just telling somebody the other day that I think I've learned more about Dylan and autism in the last 2 years than I learned in the 23 prior. But I think the biggest thing that I've learned is that so many parents feel like they're the only ones going through this. They think that so many people read my book and they say, you know, I just got an email from a dad up in like Naples last week saying, I thought I was all alone. I didn't realize that other dads felt this way. And I thought I was just a terrible parent and on, because my book is very raw. You know, it doesn't glamorize me. I tell people exactly what I went through and what I did. And sometimes it's not pretty and I'm not proud of it. And I think that's important. People need to know that they're not alone. There are a lot of parents going through the same struggles that you're going through, because a lot of us, you know, you don't know what's going on behind someone's doors in their home.
That's right.
And so, and you're not going to see it on Facebook. People don't, you know, for the most part, everybody looks wonderful and happy on Facebook, right? Everybody's got a wonderful life and everything's great. But behind the doors of their home, you don't know what's going on. And it's very hard for some parents to talk to their friends about it, because on Facebook and in around the neighborhood, it looks like their friends have perfect kids.
Right.
They're good students. They're star athletes. They're doing everything right. They're great kids. They're polite. And so that's awesome. There are some families like that who have two or three, really, they got lucky. They hit the jackpot. They have two or three kids that have no issues, have no problems, and just kind of cruise through life. Good for them. That's awesome. I have a couple of kids like that as well. It's wonderful. It's very nice. But they don't understand what these other parents are going through. They really don't. I mean, not to call anybody out. Most people don't know where I live, but most of my neighbors haven't read my book. And, you know, I don't know why, whatever, but I think to some extent they don't really want to hear about all the problems that other families have. They have their nice family and everything's going well. They don't want to hear about all the crap that other families go through. That's fine. I don't fault them for that. That's fine. But a lot of people just feel very alone and they need to know that they're not alone, that there are other people going through the same thing. And that's parents, grandparents, all kinds of, I have, you know, story after story I could tell you.
So as we get ready to wrap up the show today, what are some of the takeaways that you would say for HR professionals to, and by the way, we have a guest in the
show
today.
Yes, we do.
You know, you may have heard this in the background, but Winnie, your dog,
yes,
is in the studios today and he is doing this little woof.
Yeah.
So if you hear this, you can you can just tell everybody that he has his own site.
Yeah, he has his own Twitter. He's Oh Poor Winnie, O-H, Poor Winnie, because nobody likes him. So
everybody loves him. No. He's adorable. horrible.
He's not at all. And he's definitely not neurotypical. He has a lot of issues.
Oh, he's an awesome dog.
Yeah.
But anyways, what are the takeaways that HR professionals should really try to understand as they get ready to deal with this in the workplace more and more? What are the two or three takeaways that you would have?
I think that the takeaways are, one, understand what that person needs. Ask them, what can I do to help you? Like Jerry Maguire said, help me help you. That's what we need to do. Help me help you. How can I help you be successful here? And the other thing I think that's really important to remember, and we see this at all the autism conferences we go to, they sell these t-shirts that say, if you've met one person with autism, you've met one person with autism.
Right.
Because they're not all alike. It's a huge, gigantic range. And I've said that several times, and I just, I drive it home because it's so true. And I was at a conference in Tucson, and a lady said, we as parents need to stop comparing autisms. My autism isn't any better than your autism. His autism isn't better than her. My kid doesn't go outside and, is always in the house and always in the basement, and I can't get him to go outside. That's a problem. His kid is always getting arrested. So whose autism is better?
Right.
It's not a competition.
It's not a race.
It's not a competition.
It's not a competition.
Exactly.
That's exactly right. Derek, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thanks for having me, Dave. I really appreciate it.
It's been a great topic, and I hope everybody pays attention and really thinks about this because it's going to be a big issue over the next few years.
Absolutely.
So, you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. And now your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by VeralDana.com.
Hi, this is Rob Brooks from VeralDana. It's the beginning of flu season, and that means you've likely been asked about a dozen times in the last month if you want a flu shot. Some employers, especially in healthcare, have decided that flu shots are such a good idea that they're requiring their employees to get one. These employers believe that mandating flu vaccination protects customers, patients, and coworkers from getting sick. These employers also believe that mandating flu vaccines reduces absenteeism. But many employees are pushing back. Some employees claim that employers don't have the right to make them undergo a medical procedure. Others claim that making them receive the flu vaccine violates their religion, pointing out that many vaccines contain products derived from animals such as pigs, cows, and chickens, potentially dangerous. They point to the fact that some people have severe reactions to the flu vaccine, such as allergic reactions. These people also point out that some versions of the flu vaccine contain harmful substances like formaldehyde, aluminum, and mercury, one of the most toxic substances on the planet. And still other employees argue that the flu shot doesn't work, since each year's shot is just a guess by the vaccine makers as to which of the dozens of flu strains will be circulating this upcoming year. So before you decide to wade into this highly charged area, it's best to do a cost-benefit analysis of whether mandating vaccines makes sense for your business. And before punishing an employee for refusing to receive a flu shot, it's best to get some legal advice because these employees could be protected by laws that apply to religion, disability, whistleblowers, union status, and private medical information. If you have a question about this, you can contact me or another member of the VeralDana Labor Practice Group.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by VeralDana.com. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success. And stay tuned for Inside Portland with Bob Witkowski.